ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
And on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is a beautiful Friday, and welcome into The Drive. Bill here in the WOW Business Studio. Drew at the controls. Dan will be joining us in a little while. He had some business to take care of first, but we're here in the WOW Business Studio, where you can get 2 months free on super-fast business internet when you switch to WOW. Details at switchtowowbusiness.com. And it is the Friday edition of The Drive, a fun weekend. Auburn, Georgia coming up at Jordan-Hare. The first time that we could find that these teams have played in Auburn at this time of year. Of course, the schedule changed last year, and then it changed again with COVID. And it was the second game of the season last year over in Athens. And Georgia won it handily, 27-6. The Bulldogs come in, the number two team in the nation. And everyone, I mean, I don't know anyone who will not say the best defense in the nation there with Kirby Smart's bunch there. They have been just phenomenal. 23 points is all that the opposition has totaled, and only one touchdown against their first defense in five games. Their defense has scored more points than they've allowed. So, yes, this is going to be quite the task for Auburn tomorrow. We'd love your thoughts, questions, comments. Love to talk to some folks that were over at tip-off at Toomer's last night. Good crowd on hand for that last night. It's sort of a shame that there wasn't a slam dunk competition, but the moisture in the air, I mean, at least fortunately it wasn't rain the way it had been early yesterday morning, but because of the moisture, they didn't want to take any chances. You've already got Alan Flanagan in the cast, Walker Kessler, Bruce Pearl announcing on Tiger Talk last night out with a mild concussion. Don't want to take any more chances. Now, today it's pro day going on right now for Auburn basketball over at the arena, and it's a shame Walker Kessler and Alan Flanagan can't be working out, but still quite the show last night at tip-off at Toomer's. So, we'd love to talk to some folks who were there and get their thoughts. Of course, your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. It's quite the time now. I mean, we're talking a little basketball there. Obviously, college and pro football are going on, and the marquee game here in this area is the Auburn-Georgia game. But there's baseball going on as well, postseason baseball. And the Atlanta Braves in their first game in the postseason against the Milwaukee Brewers. Charlie Morton just got through the first inning. The Braves and the Brewers are scoreless. We will keep you updated on that as we move along here this afternoon. The hour number one of The Drive brought to you by our friends at Kia of Auburn on South College. And KiaOfAuburn.com, Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And also the sponsor of our hotline, the number that we welcome guests on when they can't be here in the studio. And all of your calls, 334-321-1390. Love for you to join in here on this Friday. You can also text us on the as yet, but hopefully soon to be sponsored, ESPN 107 text box, and that number 334-564-1840. Speaking of Major League Baseball, we have one game. Mentioned the Braves and the Brewers. That game after one, scoreless after one. Meanwhile, the Astros looking to go up 2-0 over the White Sox. That game tied with Houston batting in the bottom of the seventh. They're tied with the White Sox at 4. Of course, last night, Tampa Bay took a 1-0 lead over the Boston Red Sox, and we've got Game 1 of the Dodgers and Giants in the National League coming up tonight at 8:37. So that is your baseball update as well. We'll look at games around the country, and focus on the Southeastern Conference as we continue here this afternoon. Obviously, the one we'll spend the most time on will be Auburn, Georgia, and we will have a special guest joining us in hour number two, Jake Rowe from the 24/7 network from Dogs 247 will be joining us right at the top of hour number two. We'll get his thoughts. Georgia, it depends on where you look. Around a 15-point favorite or so. That's probably to say if it's anywhere from 14.5 to 16.5. I've even seen it up to 18. But Georgia, a solid favorite coming into Jordan-Hare tomorrow afternoon for that 2:30 kick. Other games around the Southeastern Conference. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll look at them in a little while, but we have some audio. Tell you what we will do. One of the keys for Auburn is to try to do something to avoid second and long, third and long. And thus far this season, Bo Nix's favorite target, Auburn's leading receiver, has been John Samuel Schenker, who has really stepped up and had an outstanding first half of the season. We had a chance to spend some time with John Samuel on Tuesday, and thought we'd let you listen to some of those comments. Again, we'd love for you to join in. We welcome your calls on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. But while we've got some time, here's John Samuel Schenker at his media opportunity on Tuesday.
I wouldn't say as expected, but through the year and kind of how things have gone, I've realized my role has become more crucial in the passing game. And then just catching the ball and making plays, that's about that's what the coaches ask for. And each day in practice, that's what we work on. And it's been awesome to get into the pass game and to get going. And last week was a lot of fun. So it's been really fun and enjoyable, and looking forward to the coming weeks.
Next question from Jordan Hill.
John, what's the relationship with Bo been like over the years, and how much do you think that's kind of helped this year as you've had such a big role in the passing game?
Oh, I think that's helped crucial. That's been very crucial. 3 years with the same quarterback, you understand his tendencies and what he likes and what he doesn't like in routes, and the timing obviously gets better and better each practice. So when you count up that many practices over a 3-year span, I mean, that's a lot of time with one guy. So getting that time and finally getting to use that in the passing game, it's been a lot of fun. It's kind of come easy to us with all the reps that we've had together.
Next question, Mark Murphy.
When you've looked at Georgia's defense, what do you think makes them so good this year, John?
I mean, obviously they have size, they have ability, they're super athletic, they're strong, they're powerful, I mean, they're a great defense. You're going to face that week in, week out in the SEC anyways. And obviously they have a great front seven and a good back end as well. So, I mean, we have to play great football in this game because they're a great football team. But we're looking forward to the challenge for sure.
What would it mean to you to win this game as a senior, particularly considering your hometown?
Yeah, that'd be awesome, especially bookend my career beating them. We beat them in 17. My first year here, so if we could book in that this year, that'd be really awesome.
Next question, Justin Hokinson.
Hey, John. Just kind of piggybacking a little bit on, I think you mentioned it in an earlier question, but what has been the difference? Sometimes with new coaching staffs, obviously you have kind of a newfound life as a player. You obviously have found that this season. How did that affect you?
Well, I think when you come in with a new coaching staff, you know, everything's back open. You have a new chance to kind of prove yourself and what you think you're good at. So when they came in, it kind of gave me a new life. You know, maybe we can get in the passing game a little bit more. And as spring and summer and into fall camp went, you kind of realized that, yeah, you know, we're going to be able to use the tight ends more this year. And then once we got to this season, hard work started to pay off and started to see some catches and some yards. So that's definitely it definitely re-energizes your commitment and kind of how you look at football and starting to enjoy it again as you kind of break monotony, so to speak. So that's been really fun to see and to be a part of.
Next up, Jason Caldwell.
Shane, what is the importance of a game like LSU for, you know, for a team, but specifically for you guys on offense to have that confidence to go out there in the fourth quarter and finish one off? Because that's really been kind of the issue the last couple of years is kind of start fast and kind of fade off. You guys reversed it. Is that a big confidence boost to finish it like that in the fourth quarter?
No doubt. I mean, the whole game, you know, we knew we were going to win the game the entire time. We didn't flinch. You saw that in Penn State. We started off pretty warm. We kind of depleted, and we kind of beat ourselves up in the second half. And LSU, we started slow, but we stayed in the game late in the second quarter to get us a chance in the second half. So that is a huge confidence. And not beating them in 22 years, I mean, I was one when we last beat them. So that is a confidence, especially first game in the SEC, to kind of boost you and get you going into the heart of the conference. That is a humongous boost, and we were very happy for that in the locker room, and hopefully it boosts us forward.
Next question, Justin Lee.
Hey, Dustin, you guys have heard just all season about the whiteout at Happy Valley, night game at Death Valley. Are you excited for, a rivalry game in Jordan Hare? Do you think Jordan Hare can be just loud, and what would it mean for you guys?
Yeah, no doubt. I'm tired of these hard away games. They're pretty rough. But no, we enjoy them. Definitely ready for this home game. I'm pretty sure Jordan Hare stacks up with the best in the country as far as noise. So hopefully our fans will be ready to go this Saturday like we are, and definitely looking forward to it.
Next question, John Zehner.
Yeah, John, seems like everybody's kind of perception is everybody's kind of chasing Georgia and Alabama. Is this a chance for you guys to prove that y'all kind of belong in that status?
Yeah, this is definitely a statement game, and all SEC games are. There's not a single SEC game that's not important. So that's kind of our focus, and Georgia's our next opponent, and that's who we're going to focus on this week. Obviously, they're a great football team. We have a lot of respect for them, but we're planning on going out there and playing our best football, and hopefully at the end of the game, we have more points than they do.
Next up, Jordan Hill.
John, given how good Georgia's defensive front has played, just how important do you think you guys at tight end are going to be in run blocking and trying to open up those holes for Tank and Jarquez?
No doubt. I think in any game, any big game, you have to establish a run game. That's with any team that you play. I mean, they're going to do the same thing. So I think that's a crucial part of this game, and really any game, but especially big ones, is establishing a run game so you can get Bo comfortable and allow him to make plays.
Got time for a few more. Next up, Tom Green.
Just going back to that LSU game, for you personally, 100-yard receiving game, first in your career. I think it was the first by an Auburn tight end in like 27 years. Were you just aware afterward of the kind of historical significance of that?
Not really. I didn't know how many I had. I won't be honest. I don't know how many receptions I had after the game. We were just focused on the win. That locker room was a lot of fun afterwards. I don't think I realized it till we got on the plane on the way back. So I think Coach Bobo told me that I'd reached the 100-yard mark, and then I saw some stuff on Twitter about the 1994, which was crazy because that was Bo's dad that was the quarterback that time. So that's kind of a cool little experience to have with Bo.
All right, another follow-up from Mark Murphy.
I think we're a real close-knit group. A lot of the guys I played with for 3-4 years now, and Tank and Bo are a little bit younger, but there's a lot of camaraderie on this offensive side. We like to mess around with each other, give each other hard times, but we get in the heat of battle. We always have each other's backs, and you can see that in the way we play for each other and the way the run game blocks and what we do. And we sell out every single game and every single practice to get us ready, and I think that's played a huge part in our success so far. Oh, there's always room for improvement anywhere you look. I mean, you can always reduce mental errors, penalties. You can just play cleaner football on the offensive side, and you can execute better. So there's always room for improvement, and that's what we focus on each and every day is getting better the week than we did the week before.
We've got time for two more. Next, we'll go to Luciano Chatelain.
Hey, John, a little follow-up on that. Georgia hasn't allowed a single red zone touchdown all season. How confident are you feeling going into this game, knowing how effective you have been yourselves in that area?
Yeah, no, that's definitely the red zone is definitely a very urgent spot for our offense. You know, if you can have success in the red zone, normally you have success in the football game and winning that. So that's what we focus on every week is big time in the red zone. We call money downs and situational masters. So that is a crucial part to our offense success. And we definitely are confident that we can get that job done this week.
All right, last question for Jeff Spiegel.
John, I know you're a big baseball guy too. So who you got tonight, Yankees or Red Sox?
I like the Red Sox. I'm not a big Yankees fan. I'm going to have to go with the Red Sox tonight.
And that was, John Samuelshank, our first question. Yeah, I wanted to, it would be sort of cool to talk to him about baseball and how that might have translated. I think he's shown more athleticism than some people realize. But if you watched him play baseball, you see how quick his feet are. Interesting that that Auburn and Georgia are both led in receiving by tight ends. John Samuel Schenker, who you just heard there, 18 receptions for 236 yards with a long of 35 in Georgia, led by true freshman Brock Bowers. You know, everybody thought it was going to be Eric Gilbert, Darnell Washington. Gilbert is nowhere to be found and not expected to be seen in a Georgia uniform. Washington could be back this weekend. That could really be big for them if they've got two big time threats at tight end. That is such a cushion for the Georgia quarterback, and we expect it to be Stetson Bennett. But Brock Bowers has really burst on the scene through five games, 18 receptions, 272 yards, averaging over 15 yards a catch. Of course, he had a long of 89. And he has four touchdowns. He not only leads them in receptions, but he does in total yards. He does in touchdowns. So Brock Bowers, someone that Auburn will definitely need to be aware of, along with Darnell Washington if he's playing on Saturday. Just underway here on the Friday edition of The Drive. Love for you to join in. Give us your thoughts on the game. You know, what do you think Auburn can do? What must they do to have a chance to win this ball game as a host, as big underdogs on Saturday afternoon? I'd love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the Kia of Auburn hotline as we continue here on the Friday Drive.
Russell here from University Ace Hardware. I attend Auburn University.
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday edition of The Drive. Bill and Drew here in the WOW Business Studio. Dan will join us in a little while. In Major League Baseball, in Game 2 in the American League Division Series, the Astros, six outs away for going up 2-0 as they scored a run in the bottom of the seventh, still batting, and lead the White Sox 5-4. Meanwhile, the Braves and Brewers underway in Milwaukee, and they're in the third inning, and both teams looking for their first hit. It is Charlie Morton and Corbin Burnes. The Braves, I did not realize it when we came in. The Braves had batted in the top of the first. I just saw it was a goose egg. The Braves had an opportunity in the top of the first. Burnes walking the first two batters he faced. Wild pitched both of them eventually to third, but a double play that Ozzie Albies hit into and a strikeout by Austin Riley got Burnes out of that inning. He walked Travis d'Arnaud in the second inning. So three walks for Corbin Burnes through the first two innings for the Braves without a hit. Meanwhile, Charlie Morton, he's like found the fountain of youth. He is better now than he has ever been. And he's been, I guess it was 3 years ago. I mean, Charlie Morton was a fringe player wondering if he'd be able to hang on. Now he's opening up for the Braves. Two perfect innings with five Ks for Charlie Morton. We'll keep you updated on that as well. We mentioned, you know, it's a big weekend around the Southeastern Conference in addition to the Auburn-Georgia game. Some other really interesting games. The very first game of the day, to me, is really an interesting one. That Arkansas at Ole Miss. Both teams, you know, had their perfect seasons stopped last week with decisive losses on the road. Ole Miss gets to go home now and host the Razorbacks. The Hogs really pushed around by Georgia, and that's something that, you know, for those, including myself, who have, you know, had that optimism this week about, you know, Georgia is not unbeatable, but man, they are so strong at the line of scrimmage. They really dominated Arkansas, just pushed them around last week. Now, what Arkansas did that I didn't think made a whole lot of sense, they played a three-man front against Georgia, so Georgia just ran the ball. There's no way Auburn can afford to try to do that this week, but it's on the other side that is a big concern. But Arkansas at Ole Miss, K.J. Jefferson has made some big plays with his legs and hasn't, you know, been a proficient passer, but they've hit some big plays. Meanwhile, Matt Corral and that Ole Miss offense at home licking their wounds after, you know, being – what was it? They were down, wasn't it, was it 35 before they eventually scored and lose 42-21 last week to Alabama. I like Ole Miss in this one, but it'll be an interesting one. That is the 11 o'clock game tomorrow on ESPN. One other game at 11 o'clock on the SEC Network, and I don't even know why this one's anywhere to be viewed. This will be a bloodbath as Vandy goes to Florida, and Florida coming off that loss at Kentucky last week. No, Florida is going to Florida's not going to have any mercy on Vandy this week. But that's the other 11 o'clock game at I didn't realize. Oh, there are three 11 o'clock games as there were last week. ESPN2. This is a better game to me. The ESPN2, the game on the Deuce, is a better game than the game on the SEC Network. That's South Carolina at Tennessee. Tennessee looks like they're really catching on and enjoying Josh Heupel's offense. Of course, a lot of that has to do with the fact that they played Missouri last week, and Missouri can't slow down anybody. But I think Tennessee will continue. South Carolina looking for their first conference win. Tennessee looking to go 2-1 in the conference in that 11 o'clock game in Knoxville Stadium. That's the game where Tennessee will unveil the black jerseys. And if you haven't seen them, I mean, I sort of like them. One thing I do like is having tried to spot with Tennessee playing on the field in their orange jerseys, it's impossible. You cannot make out the numbers on those Tennessee faded orange jerseys. And this time it will be easy to see them with those black jerseys on. But that's those are the early games, the Auburn-Georgia games, the 2:30 CBS game. Got a 3 o'clock game on the SEC Network as Missouri hosts North Texas. Now, Eli Drinkwitz making a change at defensive line coach this past week. North Texas comes in 1-3. If Missouri struggles defensively, and I mean, I don't know why they should all of a sudden be a whole lot better, but North Texas should be a team that Missouri beats. If they lose to this one, what an awful, awful season it could be for those Tigers. And then a pair of games tomorrow night, 6:30 on the SEC Network, LSU at Kentucky. That's a good ball game, I think. I mean, Kentucky has not been pretty. They have been solid defensively, and they have not been very much offensively thus far this year. LSU, you have to wonder, are they at least going to try? Are they going to let Kentucky play them a 2- or 3-man front and just drop back into coverage? LSU's defense isn't bad. It's not bad. Kentucky, it'll be interesting to see if Kentucky can continue to run the ball as well. If Chris Rodriguez, who is leading the SEC in rushing by a large amount, continues to pile up yards. You know LSU is going to try to stop that. And I think that if they're able to have some success slowing the Kentucky running game down, it'll be much more difficult for Kentucky to beat them passing with Will Levis than it was for Bo Nix and Auburn this past week. But yeah, I think that's a really interesting ball game there at 6:30. As one-sided a game as it appears to be in the league, and maybe in the country tomorrow, is going to be out at College Station when Alabama takes on Texas A&M. Unless Alabama is just completely disinterested and looking ahead, they should destroy the Aggies. All right, we're about halfway through hour number one. We've got some other audio. We'll let you hear Roger McCreary, Bo Nix, if we have a chance. We'd love for you to join in, though. Your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports. Braves, Brewers, going to the bottom of the third, still looking for the first hit of that ball game. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com.
And on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill here in the WOW Business Studio, and we'd love for you to join in on the Kia of Auburn Hotline, 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind, give us your pick, your thoughts for the Auburn-Georgia game, anything you want to talk about sports-wise as we continue. You know, one of the things we've talked about is it's very odd for these teams to be playing in October last year. Last year was the first time since 1936 that this game had been played any time other than November. And last year was the sixth time ever this game had been played in October. This series now has been played 125 times. Georgia's won 61, Auburn's won 56, and there have been eight ties. The first game was played in February back in 1892. Then there were four games played in October, actually five games played in October between 1915 and 1936, but all the rest of them have been played in November. And that's something, you know, some folks still lamenting that. I have no problem with it at all. I don't mind the games being moved from toward the end of the year, just in case the opportunity of a rematch comes up. I don't like those having the possibility of being played that close together, but it is taking some getting used to for some folks, especially since last year, you know, not a lot of people got to go, although it did look like Georgia had, I swear last year it seemed like Georgia had more than 20% there in the stands. But we were talking that the Georgia defense is the big key. What Auburn must do defensively is not allow Georgia to have any big plays and, do their part to keep the pressure on. Let's see. We do have a final now in the it's not a final. No, it's that inning is just over. That seventh inning for the Astros was a five-run inning. They lead the White Sox 9-4 now. As the Sox bat in the top of the eighth, it looks like the Astros are going up 2-0. We don't have the double no-hitter anymore. Lorenzo Cain got a one-out single off of Charlie Morton, but two down now, and the Brewers with a runner at first, scoreless in the bottom of the third. But what I was saying, the Auburn defense has played well. The Georgia offense has put up some numbers against lesser defenses. But I was talking a little while ago about Brock Bowers. It looks like Stetson Bennett going to get the start for the Tigers. We've got some Roger McCreary we'll let you hear in just a little while. And we'll talk about the thoughts of the secondary and the defense as we continue. But let's go ahead and get to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Spectre is up first. Hey, Spectre.
Hey, speaking of the Auburn Georgia game, the last 10 years on the Auburn, last 10 years on the Georgia schedule, they have a tendency to lose the middle of the game, middle of the pack games. I think out of the last 10 years, they lost their sixth game.
Huh.
The last 10 years.
I hadn't looked at the sixth game, but you're right. They've had some losses like South Carolina and even Vandy that we talked about yesterday. And to some teams that you never expect them to lose to. You're right about that, Spector.
Yeah, I was wondering if somebody who made this schedule up has some insight on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I still wondered who was the wise guy that when Auburn wanted it moved from November decided to put LSU and Georgia back to back this year and again next year.
Right, exactly. But anyway, I was wanting to bring that to mind that it's time for Georgia to lose.
That sounds good to me, Spector.
Yes, sir. Well, that's all I got right now.
All right.
War Eagles.
Appreciate the call. You know, this series, like I said, it's 61-56 and 8. Yeah, that's right. It has been a series of streaks, though. I mean, it has not been for a while there was the reputation that each team played better at the other team's place. But you look at it, yes, Georgia's won 16 of the last 20, starting with 2001. With the 2002 game. But from 83 to 01, Auburn was 13-5-1 against Georgia. So, I mean, you've had some long periods of dominance by one team or the other, and then it generally sort of works its way back to around 500. Georgia on a four-game winning streak right now. Their longest winning streak in the series is 8, although they did go 9 years without a loss. So that was two separate streaks. From 1923 to 31, Georgia won 8 straight. And then they went from 1944 to 52, not losing any, but tying one time in 1949. But then Auburn turned around under Shug Jordan, and after that 9-year winless streak against Georgia, Auburn won the next 6 and 3 of the next 4. So it's like I said, it has really been a series of streaks. Auburn's just hoping they can go ahead and get things turned back the other way before Georgia gets out to too much more of a lead here in the series. Mention Roger McCreary. Why don't we, while we have a chance, we'll let you hear some of the comments from the Auburn senior cornerback, who had another outstanding game against LSU. We had a chance to talk with him on Wednesday.
Here will come from Bill Cameron.
Well, first of all, congratulations, Roger. Wanted to get your thoughts. I mean, we saw some different things, different looks last week with 3 edges, 3 safeties, and then 3 corners out there. Talk about you, Nehemiah, and Jalen being on the field at the same time.
With going into that game, our strategy was to we knew that they love passing the ball, so we knew Anson came off the injury, so we knew that was a great chance to have mostly DBs out there to stop the pass.
All right, our next question from Brian Stoltz.
Hey, Roger. Georgia passed the ball only 11 times last week against Arkansas. As a player in the secondary, how do you stay focused on when the pass is going to come if they do that again?
With a running team, it's all about just being alert. Like, don't never sleep on any play because they just throw it at you any time. So, really teams run to throw the ball. So that's all we have to do is just stop them from running because that's what they mainly do. So once we stop them from running, we know that they're going to try to go to the throwing. So it's basically all just coming together, just stopping the run game first.
All right, up next is Jason Caldwell.
When Jalen was out, we didn't have that many cornerbacks to back me and Nehemiah up. So when he came back, it was great for the DBs. We had like our backup. We had like him out at practices, just talking to like all the rookies and stuff, helping out with people and all that stuff. So it's really good to have Sim back. Like with the energy, he bring a lot of energy to the defense too. So like that's another thing. So like it was really great to have him back for that game, and he did really good too.
You guys consider him a third starter? Basically, you guys kind of all play some. You consider him maybe a third starter corner?
Oh yes, sir. Because you know sometimes we move them out to the nickel. So yeah, he'll step up and play the other cornerback too. So I feel like when he steps in that game off the injury, he did great.
All right. Up next is Brian Matthews.
Overall, he played good. We talked about it after. It was a little stuff that we had to do at practice, like during the week, this stuff, because like he didn't have a lot of reps when he was hurt and stuff. So like really, that was really his first time getting a lot of action, and he did good and all that stuff.
All right, and next is Justin Lee.
I feel like it's going to be great. Every time we play Georgia, it reminds me of the 2017 game. It always, like, I know the fans will come with all the energy and all that stuff. And I say it's all really just on us to start the offense, really. I say it's a defensive game, really. So if we do our job, I feel like the offense is going to feed off our energy and everything. And that's when the crowd is going to come. And it's going to be a great atmosphere, I feel like.
Just a reminder, if you have a question for Roger, please put it in the chat. Our next one is from Jordan Hill.
Roger, I want to ask you about that game Saturday against LSU. Keyshawn Boutte started off really strong, and then for the most part, you guys locked it down. What do you think you guys adjusted that really worked in slowing him down?
With that, the first play he did, we didn't really do no adjustment. That was the crazy part about it. It was just stuff that we did. Like, we messed ourselves up just off that play and stuff. So, like, coach didn't really do no adjustment. It's just stuff that we had to get right and do the right technique, and all plays out good.
All right, up next is Mark Murphy.
Yeah, Roger, how important is it going to be for you guys to get a good start this game and not get behind like you have in some of the games recently early?
First, like Coach Harson said, you got to start off with a strong practice. Like this whole week, 1-0 every day. And coming into it, we got to prepare, film, all that stuff, and the energy. That's where it's going to start out too. We got to come out with the energy right away. With the offense, the defense, whoever get on the field first, it's all about the energy and our preparation for the game.
All right, next is Steve Moulton.
Roger, where do you feel like you maybe have grown the most this year, and where would you like maybe to improve moving forward?
I feel like I need to first start out with improvement. I feel like I need to improve with, like, mainly, like more, like, my technique-wise because, like, I feel like I've been slipping with that lately, but I've been trying to work on it and that. The stuff I feel like I improved on is, like, me trying to be more of a vocal leader. And I feel like I'm trying to, like, help, like, you know, we need, like, more backup. So I've been trying to help the young guys to come along with us to help us in the game.
All right, we have a follow-up from Justin Lee.
You mentioned that 2017 Georgia game. Were you on a visit that week, or were you watching on TV?
Oh, yes, sir. I was really at the game. And when I seen that crowd, that's what that game really made me want to come to Auburn there. It was just the fans, the atmosphere, and all that stuff. I seen how it was, and I finally get to play in the game, so that just made me more excited to play this Saturday.
All right, do you have any other questions for Roger? Okay, thanks everybody. And just a reminder, pick up your...
And that was Roger McCreary just a couple of days ago as the Tigers get ready to host number 2 Georgia tomorrow afternoon at 2:30. Big day today. What a gorgeous day it's been. Beautiful day for the unveilings of the statues over at the stadium. Coach Jordan, Cliff Hare, and Pat Dye's statues unveiled today. So you can, if you haven't been over there yet, you can check those out. What a crowd there already is in town. This is the you know, the first big full game and the big game atmosphere that we've had since a couple of years ago. So, you know, be ready for it. Leave early if you're trying to get somewhere. If you're, tomorrow, if you're heading to the game, if you're going to the game, you definitely want to leave early. But give yourself time to go by and see those statues, too. They're really, really impressive over at the stadium. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join in. The Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. Again, Jake Rowe of 247 Sports. Dogs 24/7 will be joining us at the top of the hour. Dan may come in at some point as well. We'd love for you to here on the Friday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com and on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Friday afternoon, Bill here in the Wild Business Studio. Drew handling the controls and screening calls, and we've got a couple. Let's get right to the phone. And Slack is up first. Hey, Slack.
Hey, guys.
What's going on?
You solo today?
So far, yeah. Dan had a function on campus that he had to attend, and don't know when or if he'll be in.
You should have called me. I could have came in and helped him.
Man, if I'd known. I thought, well, maybe he'd be in a half an hour. Yeah, I would have.
Yeah. There's traffic.
Traffic is, yeah. That's what I mean. We haven't seen this in a long time. We didn't get any of it last year because of COVID. I mean, it's real.
Glad to see it.
Yep.
Glad to see it. Businesses in Auburn, no block of glad to see it.
Oh, there's no question there. This will be a huge economic boon for the area.
You know, I look back on when Coach Dye was coaching, and he put the emphasis on state of Georgia, getting the athletes out of Georgia. And what do we have? Like, oh, God, probably on both sides of the ball. We got quite a few guys starting that's Georgia natives, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's been a little disappointing.
On the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, the last couple of years it hasn't been quite as strong, but no, Auburn's always relied on the Georgia boys.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of these guys and kids have competed against each other in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So they know exactly what they're dealing with. Let me ask you a question about stealing signals. How much of that you think still goes on in college football?
Well, as much as they can. I mean, you know, if a team's going to be, too obvious about what they're doing, then other teams are going to pick up on them. I don't know if it's as rampant as some people would have you think, or as much as it used to be. I mean, you see guys now, they're making sure they're using those play sheets and whatever to cover their mouths, even when they're talking into their headsets.
I watch Coach Pittman last week, Arkansas, when they were playing Georgia. He made sure that he was covering his mouth, but it didn't do much good. And I'm not saying Georgia was still in signal, but they just looked like they knew exactly where every play was going.
There have been a couple of games. It sure seemed like that. I mean, I know Kirby's an outstanding defensive guy. But then you go back to the 2010 game where in the second half they didn't seem to have any idea, and you could see Kirby telling Nick that they weren't supposed to do that.
Yeah. I remember telling some buddies about mm-hmm. that one day this week, exactly. Or they didn't call that play.
Right.
I had one of the assistant coaches from Auburn tell me the same thing after that ball game, a few days after the ball game. And they changed the way that they were calling plays in the second half. And
mm-hmm.
you can tell the difference in the ball game.
No question about that.
Does it give us an advantage that Georgia doesn't really know what we're going to call? Or are they not really – we don't have a lot of game film on?
Yeah, a little. Although, I mean, I don't know anybody that knows Mike Bobo much better than Kirby Smart. I mean, those guys have been.
And Mike Bobo knows Kirby.
That's it? True. That is true.
Okay. I mean, it just comes down to execution on both sides of the ball.
That's right.
Receivers need to.
Breakdowns, mistakes, turnovers can be, the difference in the ballgame.
And I think the thing that's impressed me the most about this year's team, every now and then you see a penalty, but we're not a team that commits a lot of penalties during the ballgame.
Thus far, you're right. Auburn's in the upper third of the SEC in that. And that's good considering they played in two very hostile road environments.
Exactly. Appreciate it, guys.
Appreciate it, Slack. Olin, we've only got about 30 seconds. It'd probably be best if you just give us a call back. Now, right at the top of the hour, we're going to have our guest from 24/7 Sports with Georgia, but want to give you plenty of time. So you can hang on, but feel free to call back if you'd like. Right now, we've got to step aside for our top of the hour break, halfway done here on the Friday Drive.
Sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. And on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of The Drive here on this beautiful Friday afternoon. Again, just a word to those. If you've been inside, haven't been out in the traffic, it is like a big game. Oh, you know what? There is a big ball game coming up this weekend. Tomorrow afternoon, Jordan-Hare Stadium will be rocking as the second-ranked Georgia Bulldogs come in. We'll be talking with Jake Rowe, who covers Georgia for 24/7 Sports here momentarily. But let's take care of a little business first as we come to you, as usual, here in the WOW Business Studio, where you can get 2 months free on super-fast business internet when you switch to WOW. Details at switchtowowbusiness.com. And hour number two of The Drive, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika. On the web at orthoclinic.com. And with that, well, we'll let you know. Dan, with a function on campus and knowing how the traffic is trying to get from campus over here, you know, we'll see him when we see him. But in the meantime, we're pleased to go to the Kia of Auburn hotline, Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And welcome in Jake Rowe of Dogs 247, covering Georgia on a daily basis. Jake, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Still a lot of folks still trying to get used to, hey, if it's Auburn and Georgia, it's got to be sometime in November, right? Wrong. I mean, for just the sixth or seventh time ever, this ball game's going to be played out of the month of November. But that's the way it looks like, at least until we have to readjust for Texas and Oklahoma. Looks like that's the way, folks should be getting used to.
Yeah, and I tell you what, man, I've been to this game. I've been to the Georgia-Auburn game probably more than I've been to any other, Georgia game. And some of the coldest times of my life.
Yep.
Some of the coldest days ever recorded in the month of November have been when these two teams have played. The most notable, 1997 in Athens. Holy smokes, I've never been so cold in my life. Like, I couldn't feel my feet. It was ridiculous.
Hey,
this one can be cold.
Oh yeah, I've been going to them for a long, long time. As a matter of fact, I think that was the first road game that I took my older son to. Was the 97 game, and we stopped along the way and bought some extra undergarments. We'd worn like hunting boots and everything we could wear. And you're right. That was one of the coldest, games I've ever been to. It's funny. You're exactly right. It seems like that game's usually colder than the game that comes a week later, Georgia Tech for you guys, Alabama for Auburn. Doesn't seem like that one's as cold many times as the Georgia-Auburn game.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about it. It's almost like Georgia's got a similar thing with South Carolina where it's usually the hottest day of the year. So, you know, Georgia played South Carolina under, the heat of 1,000 suns instead of one, and then they play the coldest game of the year usually against Auburn. It's just weird that it falls like that.
Yeah, well, regardless, though, the Deep South's oldest rivalry being continued, and Georgia really on a roll. This has been a series. It's crazy how back and forth it has been with streaks, and Georgia really on one now. They won 16 of the last 20.
Yeah, and, you know, it really changed in 2005. You know, it changed with that with that long pass, that kind of miracle pass there toward the end of the game where, you know, Auburn was able to kind of – I believe that might have been a fourth down play as well.
Yep, it was.
You know, Auburn kind of got back into it in that game, beat Georgia. And since then, Georgia got the upset in 2006 and unintended consequences because Georgia beat Auburn and opened the door for Florida to win a national title that year. But, that since that upset in 2006, Georgia really has been on a roll. I mean, it's taken Cam Newton and the prayer of Jordan Ayer and then kind of a pantsing. They just kind of beat the crap out of Georgia there. 2017. So it's those three wins, and they've been memorable.
Yeah, you're right. And then, of course, Georgia was just a few weeks later able to turn things around and knock off Auburn and get back into the playoff and make it all the way to the championship game.
Crazy season, man. Georgia and Auburn had never played each other twice in the same season, much less twice in the same, 30-day period. So, I mean, it was definitely unique.
Yeah, and that's why so many Auburn people, and I was sort of among them. I mean, I would rather have non-division games that, if there's a possibility of having to rematch against somebody, I'd rather play them a little earlier. So you got a little time, at least, in between a possible rematch. So that's what we have now. But, man, what an outfit Kirby is bringing in this time. This is as impressive a defensive unit as I can recall, and I've been seeing these teams for a long, long time. This may be the best defense that I've ever seen from Georgia.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy about it, man, is it's not as talented as last year's defense. It's just not. I mean, they lost three defensive players in the top 50 picks last year.
Mm-hmm.
They had another starter transfer to Miami. They had another starter transfer to Florida State. Both of those two players are maybe the best players on their current team right now, our current defense. And I think the big thing that Georgia has right now that it hasn't had, and I know this is a four-letter word in the city of Auburn is Alabama. They've got those playmaking defensive tackles. They've got those guys right in the middle of everything that are disruptive, and they make tackles for a loss. And they just make life hard on opposing, offenses. And that's the biggest difference in this Georgia team is, Jordan Davis, Devontae Wyatt, Jalen Carter, Nazir Stackhouse. You could even throw Trayvon Walker in there. They're all healthy and they're all playing at a high level. And that has really changed some things. It has made the inside linebackers play a lot better. It's opened some things up and created some one-on-one opportunities for the outside linebackers. And like they hoped it would, because the secondary was a little green coming into the season, it's had a ripple effect toward the back end of that defense, and that's what Georgia needed to happen.
Oh, no question. I mean, and that's your dream as a defensive coordinator or just as a fan, is that you're going to be able to get after the quarterback. You're going to be able to disrupt things. You're going to be able to have a pass rush, stop the run with your front and not having to bring anybody extra, not having to overload. I mean, that's one thing Georgia can do that almost everybody else is having to have a little help when they're trying to get after the quarterback or when they're trying to stop the run. Georgia's linebackers and their secondary, their back seven is much freer because of the talent that's there in front of them.
Dan Lanning has the luxury of blitzing when he wants to and not when he has to.
Right.
you know, and that's something, you know, you mentioned it. That's something that every defensive coordinator, they really want to be able to do that. They want to pick their spots rather than have their spots picked for them. And, you know, that's kind of what Georgia has going for it, more so from a running, more so from a run stuffing standpoint, mm-hmm. than a pass rushing standpoint. They're a solid pass rushing team, a good pass rushing team. They do a really good job, I think, of affecting quarterbacks more so than they get a bunch of sacks and get teams behind the chains. But from a run stopping standpoint, that is where this Georgia defense for years now, we're going on year three of Georgia's run defense kind of being the type of unit that it can control the run game, you know, a large percentage of the time without having to borrow from the secondary. And you know, that, again, you want to talk about those ripple effects, that has one on the rest of the defense.
Yeah, from Auburn's point of view, I mean, something that they're trying to figure out, and you know, we'll find out tomorrow if they have any, you know, anything that works, and that is trying to come up with some plays that put them in workable solutions on second and third down, where they're not second and nine, third and eight, things like that. The running game is critical for Auburn, although I don't know that they can expect to be able to line up and run after you saw Arkansas is a darn good running team and Georgia's completely shut them down. But I do think, Jake, that this to this point, this will be the most balanced offense that Georgia has played this year.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, definitely. You know, Auburn is a type of team, you know, I've watched Auburn really heavily the last couple of weeks, and I didn't get to see a whole lot of the Penn State game as it was going on. Went back and watched that. Didn't really pay attention to the first couple of weeks all that much because those No. were just kind of light 'em up type games. And one of the things I feel like I've learned about Auburn is there is a certain level of balance there. There's a certain level of capable balance or potential balance, I would mm-hmm. say. But also, I think Auburn's still the kind of team, and these teams can be dangerous, man. They're reaching around in that bag, and they're still trying to feel what is the identity. And, you know, you don't want to be the other team on the other side of the ball, I don't care how good you are, when a team finally finds that. And you know, I think that's something you have to watch out for coming into this game, because did Bo Nix find something last week against LSU? Or did he do something last week against LSU that he may try to rely a little bit too much upon against Georgia? That, to me, is a big question going into this game because, you know, for all intents and purposes, if you follow, you know, Auburn from the outside like I have, and don't really know the day-to-day, you know, I'm not like our guy Nathan King or you know, Jason Caldwell. Those guys do a phenomenal job. But I thought, you know, kind of going hands-off throughout the week that T.J. Finley's going to start against LSU. And, you know, I know a lot of people thought that. And you know, in terms of his Auburn career, Bo Nix was kind of out in the cold, according to the public perception. And then all of a sudden, he's starting, he's running around, he's making plays, he finds a way to get Auburn a win and win a game on the road that they haven't won since 1999. What's next for that? You know, because sometimes that can kind of be a springboard for a guy. But the way he did it also kind of makes me wonder, you know, is that going to be the formula that he tries to go with going forward, and will it be successful?
Yeah, that would be a tough thing to count on, having to do that week in and week out. But yeah, Brian Harsin didn't let on. I felt it was going to be Bo all along just because that's the guy they had picked. But interesting that perspective. Having said that, your thoughts on defending Bo Nix?
You know, Georgia's done a pretty good job of it the last mm-hmm. couple of years. Now, I think Auburn is a little better on the offensive line now than it has been the last couple of seasons, and I think a lot of that's got to do with experience. I don't mean any disrespect when I say this, because I covered some of those. I'm Rodarius Ham. I've known him. I've known the kid since he was a, you know, sophomore or junior in high school, back when I covered recruiting. You know, I know some of those guys. I followed some of their, their recruitments and their careers. I don't think you're looking at a group that has a ton of NFL starting talent. I don't think that group, you're going to look back on this group and see like three or four starters in the NFL in a few years. But what I do think is they've played a lot better together, something Will Friend does a really good job of as an offensive line coach. And, you know, he was at Georgia, and I got to witness that myself. Mm-hmm. and they're experienced. You're not going to throw a whole lot at that group that they haven't seen. I think that's one of the keys in this game. Now, can Georgia overpower them? Maybe. I'm not going to assume that because, you know, I'm not one of these guys that, you know, gets all fired up about the team he covers and thinks they're, you know, unstoppable. I think any team can be beaten on any day. But I do think that this Auburn offensive line is a little bit more capable of protecting Bo Nix than the last two that have faced Georgia. But I also think Georgia's defensive line, in all seriousness, is probably better. Bo Nix just has to make good decisions with the football. He is what he is, I think, from an accuracy perspective. He's going to struggle with that some. I think regardless, there are a lot of quarterback coaches out there that will tell you that you can improve accuracy a little, but not dramatically. And I think Bo is what he is as far as that goes, but he can make up for that by extending plays and allowing guys to get in some serious space where he doesn't have to have pinpoint accuracy. And I think that's something that Georgia has to really guard against him. And they've got to spy him. They've got to chase him down. They've got to use the athletes they have at their disposal to kind of mirror him and make sure that he doesn't have a chance to – you know, move the chains on third and long by just outrunning everybody in the backfield.
Talking with Jake Rowe of Dogs 247, and Dan's made it in. Dan, how you doing, man?
Doing all right, guys. Sounded great on my way in. I wondered if the show even needed me today, but I thought I'd.
Well, I'm glad yeah, you made it. Appearance.
I thought I'd come in and clock in at the very least. But
well, that's nice. Well, we've been talking with Jake primarily about Georgia's defense, Auburn's offense. Let's flip it. I wanted to flip it to the other side. What you got?
Well, I'd be curious getting Jake's thoughts on something we've wondered about this week, which is, you know, in looking at, and there are no weaknesses that stand out on the Georgia team, but looking at potential weaknesses, we've sort of focused on the fact that, if you know, you got to go back to 2019 to have real college football road games, mm-hmm. if you take out the 2020 season, and very few of the Georgia players that will start tomorrow have a lot of experience on the road against quality
in
opposition, yeah, in truly right. in true college football hostile atmospheres. I was wondering if Jake thinks that's maybe something that could potentially favor Auburn tomorrow.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I that's something that I've said multiple times this week too. And you want to know what's funny about it is the last time Georgia played in a hostile environment was, I believe, it was November 19th,
yeah.
2019
that's
against
right.
Auburn because. You know, Georgia went to Vanderbilt the week after that. Not Vanderbilt, I'm sorry. Georgia went to Georgia Tech the week after that. There were more Georgia fans in that stadium than there were Georgia Tech fans. Georgia went to Vanderbilt earlier this season.
Yep.
You know, again, we're talking about capacity crowds. There were more Georgia fans in the stadium that day. And then there have been some neutral site contests in there between there. So, yeah, this is Georgia's first capacity crowd since the last time they played Auburn. And I definitely think that's a factor. You know, I think it's a factor for – more so for possibly Georgia's offensive line because, mm-hmm. you know, you look at even Warren McClendon starting at right tackle. You're looking at right guard, Warren Erickson, center, Cedric Van Pran, he's a redshirt freshman. You know, those three guys have really never played any football in a hostile environment because all three of those guys are basically second-year starters. So they haven't been there. You know, your receiver, Ladd McConkey, Brock Bowers at tight end, Darnell Washington at tight end. Those are all second-year players, A.D. Mitchell and Jermaine Burton. None of Georgia's receivers have ever been in an environment like that. They've never experienced the kind of noise that's going to be there. And while Stetson Bennett has never really been, and I truly believe he's going to be the quarterback tomorrow, he's never really quarterbacked in a full house capacity like that either. Last year at Alabama was pretty live, but nowhere near what it's going to be at Jordan-Hare Stadium. But I think Stetson, being a 22, 23-year-old man at this point in his life, I mean, he's old head at this point. I think he's going to be better equipped to handle it than some of those, you know, 18, 19-year-old guys that haven't really played any football in a place like this yet.
Yeah, I would think so as well, and that's what we've been talking about all week, is expecting Stetson to be the starter. Was there something, an injury issue with Stetson this week too?
No, not that we know of. Okay. Yeah, he
somebody,
has
I heard somebody asked. Somebody asked me that today, and I wasn't able to check on anything, so I thought I'd ask that because as far as I knew, he was fine.
Kirby's a gamesman as far as the injuries go. And a few weeks ago after Stetson threw for all those yards against UAB, you know, Kirby brought up the fact that Stetson was dealing with a back issue. And Stetson has been fine ever since. I think it's one of those things where maybe he has to get treatment on it, so Kirby threw it in there. That way maybe there's some doubt. I really don't know. I don't know what's going on with all the secret, you know, the secretive, you know, way the coaches go about it and, the, you know, who they allow in, who they allow out, how information gets out. It's something else these days, but I think Stetson Bennett is fine. And you know, I'm not 100% positive that JT Daniels wouldn't be able to play if needed.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what I was figuring. Well, I mean, both teams obviously are out to make the other one-dimensional. It's going to be a difficult task for Auburn because, I mean, Georgia's got it is a four-headed monster there at running back.
Yeah, they've got a really good group of running backs. And you know, to this point in the season, they haven't really had to challenge any of them with a lot of carries. I think Zamir White had a pretty healthy load there in the first game because he kind of carried it in the four-minute drive as Georgia salted away the game late. Other than that, it's been kind of maybe low double-digit carries for whoever does it. And that's something that – you know, may end up paying, you know, dividends for Georgia down the road as those running backs get healthy. I think one of the things that I'm interested to see is Georgia's offensive line since game one, since they had to kind of shuffle some things and get it figured out in preseason camp and then again with another injury in the opener. Then they, you know, came out against UAB. The unit played flat. It wasn't very good. And then steadily since that game, the trajectory has been upward. And I wonder if they're really building some confidence and if they can handle the noise, will they play at a high level and allow those running backs to cook a little bit? Because they didn't get much going there kind of in the, you know, first and second game of the season other than Zamir White. But ever since then, it's kind of steadily trended upward, and they've been able to do a little bit more and a little bit more each week.
Well, Auburn, a little more than a two-touchdown underdog, and I can only find one other time that Auburn has been a double-digit underdog at home to Georgia. That was 2012 when the season was already completely done for Auburn. So it's going to be quite the task for Auburn tomorrow. How do you see it, Jake?
You know, this is kind of there's two things kind of coming together here, and it's one of my big questions going into this game. I was talking with Jordan Hill, who used to intern with me over at Dogs 24/7.
Sure.
He covers Auburn for the Opelika News and does a great job. Great kid, great guy. You know, Jordan was telling me about how Auburn's kind of battled slow starts this year. Well, you know, Georgia has been the exact opposite.
Ooh, no kidding.
Georgia has come out of the gates, you know, tornadoes and teeth. I mean, that's what it's been like every game this year. Even against Clemson, when the way the defense came out, you know, I mean, the offense didn't necessarily match it, but since then the offense has. I wonder if that's going to be a factor, because if it is, you can really kind of control a crowd mm-hmm. by coming out and getting a little lead going. With that said, I think if Georgia doesn't, I just think Georgia's – listen, you're talking about a coach in transition here, and coaches are in transition for a reason. And the reason is usually because the roster's not quite where it needs to be. That coach, at some point, something has gotten stale, whether it's recruiting, whether it's coaching, whether it's the message, whether it's all of the above. And I think Brian Harsin has come in, and for Auburn to be 4-1 right now, has done an incredible job. But at the same time, you can't expect a coach in his sixth game as a head coach to be on the same level in terms of where he wants his roster to be as a coach who's in his fifth game of his sixth year. And I think the Georgia's roster is ultimately going to give them the best chance to win this game. And I think whether Georgia starts fast or not, I think it'll pull away at some point in this game. And I don't miss, you know, I on our podcast, I picked Georgia to cover. But there are only two outcomes of this game that will really surprise me. I think if Georgia comes out and just blows Auburn's doors off, I don't see that happening. I think Auburn's going to play too hard, and this home environment is going to help them and keep them in it. Or Auburn wins, you know. And I don't want to put it that way, that like I'm going to be shocked if Auburn wins, but I'll be a little bit surprised just because of, again, where these two rosters are.
Jake, we really appreciate it. Great stuff, man. I'm glad Jason put us in touch. Really enjoyed your visit with us here. You coming over tomorrow?
Actually, no. My everything's great. Everything's perfect. But my six-year-old got COVID a couple weeks ago.
Oh, man.
Or a couple, well, not last Sunday, but the Sunday before that. And so quarantine, and you know, we're owned by CBS. We got a lot of protocols we have to go through.
Right.
And I'm not quite out of the clear in terms of when I can travel for work. So I will. I'll be back in action in a press box somewhere next week. I hate that I'm going to miss Auburn, but I won't be making it up to the Plains this time.
All right. Well, well then we won't see you there tomorrow. But again, really appreciate you spending some time with us, and good luck. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate y'all.
All right. Jake Rowe joining us from Dogs 247 here on the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan, we need to get to our first break. It's going to be a short break when we come back, but we'll have the phones open for the rest of the show here on the Friday Drive.
South ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com and on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Bill and Dan here in the Wild Business Studio with Drew at the controls, and Olin is up next on the Kia of Auburn Hotline. Hey, Olin.
Hey, how you doing, Bill?
Good.
Hey, look, you asked me the last time I called you about Wainwright. Sure, I think Wainwright should be a Cy Young winner. I think he demonstrated at the highest level with his 5.1 innings that that he can pitch against as tough a team as you can put out there. And so, you know, I hated that we didn't win the game. We won a lot of games by hitting that long ball late and winning it, but this one is when they did it. So when you play in quality teams, that's what happens. But anyhow, I think I look at St. Louis. I like how they came through the year. I like the young players that begin to really come into shape as the year came on. And we're a lot more dependent upon our young players than we are our stars at first base and third base. And, you know, that's good, because I think that the problem teams get into is they think if they get a key player here or a key player there, it's going to make a difference. No, it is a team sport, and you got to put nine good players on the field.
And, the Cardinals have always been good at bringing some of those guys along. Olin, we've got that hard break coming up. You want to hang on and continue here on the other side?
Yeah, I'll wait. Right. I'll just wait. Right. And I'll be waiting. Right. When you come back, we'll talk Georgia, okay?
We'll be right back.
And online at ESPNAU.com and on Fox Sports Central Alabama at 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final 25 minutes of the Friday Drive. Full bank of calls. We were talking with Olin when we ran out of time. And Olin wants to, we're going to talk a little football now, Olin, right?
Yep, we're going to talk about Georgia. Yeah, this is one of my favorite games, and quite frankly, it's a game that I'd rather win more than any of them. Now, I've seen a lot of them. I'm going to go back to when I started watching them when Auburn played Georgia over in Columbus, Georgia, of all places. Yeah, and man, I saw Vince Dooley and Bobby Freeman playing on the XY teams just eat Georgia alive that day, the last time I saw them. And that was wonderful. But anyhow, I think things are setting up well for Auburn. I think that the season, as it has unfolded, we always talk about the players this, the players that, whatever. I think the people that have learned the most up to this point in time are the coaches. I think they probably learned more and more, and we could see it in the game against LSU. I think they've learned more and more what will work and what won't work, what they can do, what they can't do. And I think it's pretty obvious that we got a credible running attack, and I think it'd be more credible against Georgia if they make sure that they're running straight at them. Don't try to run away from them. They're too talented for that. Just go right straight at them. And then also the fact that they've been moving their tight ends deeper in the pass patterns and throwing less to the wideouts and more to the tight ends and more to the back out of the backfield with Shivers coming back. And I think that the combination of the way they put all that together has Auburn moving in a positive direction with regard to offensive output. To win the game, we got to keep Georgia on the field. We got to make those big, mean, tough Georgia guys get so damn tired that they can't move, that they can't walk, that they wonder, why am I cramping up? It's because, hey, you're beginning to panic. You're beginning to get beat, and you're going to get beat. And it doesn't make a difference what the score is. The game's going to be played, I think, in the last 10 minutes. And if it is, I think that Auburn has a great chance to win the game.
I agree, Olin. I mean, Auburn has to try to get this ball game to the fourth quarter. And you'll see some similarities. I mean, Georgia's going to do the same type thing, even though they have four different guys that they run the ball. They're tight ends. If Darnell Washington's back, that's going to be another big factor for Auburn. But Brock Bowers is their best receiver, just like John Samuel Schenker's been Auburn's best receiver.
Last week, it was imperative that Auburn was prepared for an offense that was going to try to throw the ball no matter what situation they were looking at, whether it was first and 10 or second and goal at the 1 or second and goal at the 32. They'll throw, and they'll throw all over the field on any situation. Georgia, to me, is a far more get-the-first-down, disciplined offense than LSU, and they're trying to set up, we've been saying it all week, favorable situations on second and third down. And you can't let Georgia do that or you'll lose. If Georgia is averaging 5 or 6 yards a play on first down, there's...
And Auburn's got to average more than 2 on first down.
Right.
I mean, Georgia shuts people down on first down. And that's something Auburn's going to have to get over. So,
avoiding,
so that's a great point,
Sarah. Avoiding third and long with Bo Nix and forcing Stetson Bennett into those third and longs.
Back to the phone we go, and Terry is up next. Hey, Terry.
We got Terry?
Yeah, hey, guys. Hey, how y'all doing?
What's up, bud?
How y'all doing?
Good.
Great. Hey, guys, I've been the work schedule has been a little crazy this week, but I've been listening in thanks to your affiliate here. 98.3 is awesome. That's just great.
Yeah, they are.
But I wondered what's going on the show this week with all the love for Bo Nix. I mean, here's a guy that ain't won Jack Diddley. No conference title, no Western Division, no bowl game, no nothing.
Well,
and
everybody's loving
on him like he's this great quarterback again.
Well, he won the game last week, Terry. There's no way around that. No matter what, last week he did, and that's just the way it is. I mean, if he goes out and stinks it up this week, everybody will hate on him next week. But, I mean, it's a what have you done for me lately? And the last thing he did was the most spectacular thing he's ever done, and he did something that it helped Brian Harsin do something that Gus never did, and that's beat one of the big rivals on the road.
Yeah, I mean, if ever there's a time to be enthusiastic about Bo Nix, I would say it's in the aftermath of either the best game he's ever played or the best game he's ever played outside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. I mean, you could take your pick, but, I mean, if ever there was a time to be enthusiastic about the guy, it's right now.
Well, the one thing I do know, the most consistent thing about Bo Nix has been inconsistency. And just the week before the LSU game, and I agree with he played outstanding. He played his rear end off, no doubt about that. Okay, but the comparisons to some of the quarterbacks like Fran Tarkington was ridiculous. I mean, I just don't see any kind of consistency. I just don't follow it, guys. I mean, if he does it back to back games, okay, there's something there. But I do it one game, and just a week before that, he was against Georgia State. He was benched. And if I'm Georgia, their defense is awesome. I don't know if I've ever.
Terry, I thought the Fran Tarkenton comparison made a lot of sense because when Bo made that touchdown pass against LSU, I said, that's incredible.
Fran Tarkenton played in the NFL. Bo Nix never will, Dan.
I don't know about Bo Nix's pro prospects. I've been wrong about quarterbacks saying there's no chance they'll ever play in the NFL, and a couple of those guys went. First overall, a couple of them are starting like this weekend, right? So I mean, I understand wanting to sort of pump the brakes on the Bo Nix Heisman Express as it pulled out of the station last Saturday. But at the same time, I think it's understandable that people are very fired up about the Bo Nix that they saw this past Saturday night.
Last thing, guys, hadn't Bo Nix traditionally played well against LSU?
Two of the best games of his career were last year's LSU game and this year's LSU game. And Auburn in 2019 played LSU
played
as closely
well.
as just about anybody in the country did. Yes.
But discuss at the end of the year when LSU's 4-8.
It will not seem like as big of a win if the bottom drops out on LSU. You still have since 1999. You have the historical element, but if LSU is a mile from the top 25 at the end of the season, yeah, it's going to be hard to hold that up as a.
Well, when they go 4-8 and another Orange trying to find the Little Debbie Isle at Publix, we'll know. Y'all have a good weekend.
All right, Terry.
Ebenezer Terry.
I don't know that any of us have said that. that Bo Nix is great now. It's just that was a great game, though, last week. There's no way around that.
I mean, look, and I understand, you know, sometimes people can get out of hand comparing, you know.
The way he moves in when he's scrambling evokes some memories of. I'm not saying that he's going to be able to complete every one of them.
I saw some Favre back in 2019. Yeah, I remember talking about, like, oh man, this guy's got, you know, some of that young, willingness to take a hit, willingness to run into trouble, and a belief that his arm can make the throw, even if it seems like a really low percentage throw. I mean, those are Favrean qualities on top of anything else. But anyway, I think it's if ever there was a week to, you know, for Auburn fans to be really excited about Bo Nix, it's the week following what he did Saturday night.
334-321-1390, and Dan is up next. Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys. I didn't want to waste this call defending Bo, but if he got a little bit more blocking and a little bit more help from his wide receiving core, he would look really damn good right now. So, you know, if you're dropping five or six passes a game, and I'm not talking 50-50.
You're right. There have been at least, I mean, there were at least five, probably six last week, and there have been 3 to 6 in just about every game this year.
I mean, there's been some touchdown passes.
Yep.
that could have been caught. So anyway, I don't know. You know, I think with the coaching he's got now, you know, I think he's just going to get better and better. And I definitely think he's going to be in the pros one day. So, but what I was going to call about, I'm honestly kind of strangely, I'm an Auburn homer, you know that, but I feel really good about this game. I just think that everything is lining up, you know, to give Auburn that chance that we need. It's Pat called yesterday and was talking about how, you know, everything can snowball. If you look at all the different factors, you know, all their players having not played a road game this year, really, you know, playing against a bunch of bad offenses, you know, having the three easy games in a row. I just think there's just a lot of factors there that are all going our way. And we know what happens in Jordan-Hare Stadium. I mean, Jordan-Hare Stadium is just one of those places that anything can happen, and we've all seen the miracles. I've been up to most of them, you know, call it a miracle or call it, you know, a kick six or whatever. But I just feel like they're going to have a really hard time with the crowd. I just don't think Georgia's going to score a ton of points. I think we have a good run defense. I think we're going to give them a lot of trouble there, and they're going to have to make a lot of throws. And they have a lot of young guys, a lot of young receivers that could easily have issues. You know, they haven't had any pressure all year. It's all been easy. Everyone's telling them how great they are. And we're going to find out if they really are as good as they are. And I'm picking Auburn 27-17.
27? Wow. Okay. I was going to say, now, I went out on a big limb on the rivals picking and picked Auburn. But there was no way I could give Auburn more than 20 points.
Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. See, I'm thinking it's close. I mean, I share the optimism of a lot of Auburn fans this week. Now, I was optimistic about last year's Auburn-Georgia game, so I should probably offer the caveat that last year Auburn was going to Georgia, and I was wondering.
Auburn was number 7 in the country.
Auburn was number 7 team in the country. Georgia was going in with Stetson Bennett when he was a big question mark going into that game. And after a quarter, I think it was really apparent that the Georgia offense was just, I mean, going to be able to. They were going to be able to do enough, and the Auburn offense was kind of lost at sea that day. Auburn has to avoid, you know, you can't come out of the first quarter thinking, oh, this is going
to
be.
You can't have that kind of start. Yeah, that's what Jake Rowe was talking about, how Georgia has gotten off to great starts and Auburn has struggled. And we'll definitely find out how good Auburn's rush defense is this week.
The longer this game is close, the more uncomfortable it is for Georgia.
Absolutely.
Because they haven't been in the business of playing close games this year.
Yeah, and also their players haven't. I mean, they basically had their starters play half a game. They really haven't had to play a whole lot. So, I don't know. I've seen stranger things happen at Auburn, and I'm picking that. This is the week. Anyway, appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Dan.
It's uncomfortable when the game's close. And what's the past uncomfortable if Auburn's leading? Like, that's where Georgia
more
is.
More uncomfortable.
Yeah,
it's not uncomfortabler.
Yeah, so. Concerning. It gets into very concerning. You know, it gets into that, so alarming, maybe.
Alarming,
I mean, that's where it is. Because Georgia's had.
I thought you were looking for past tense.
They have absolutely no experience being behind.
No, you're right.
Trailing this year. I don't think they've trailed for a second in any of their games this year. So because they were up, they were up on Clemson 10-0 when Clemson finally scored. UAB was on was on the bus before they finally.
Well, that's what's happened since then. They have just absolutely blown people away.
Yes,
so, the games have been over at the end of the first quarter,
and that's why it's imperative that Auburn can't be added to the list of teams. You know, if they want to win tomorrow, they can't. You know, they can't be in a situation where they got to dig themselves out of a grave in the first quarter. Because the longer this game is close, the more that's an uncomfortable situation for Georgia. The longer Auburn has a lead in this game, that's alarming for Georgia. It's a problem for Georgia because that's something they don't have experience with this year.
334-321-1390, and Anthony is up next. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, gentlemen, how you guys doing today?
Doing fine.
I want to ask you guys something. A co-worker of mine was telling me something about Orgeron was on the radio and got upset and said something that was inappropriate. Well, do you guys know anything about that?
Yeah. I mean, what was inappropriate was a caller called in and started off asking Ed to say happy birthday to his daughter. And when he did, he then made an inappropriate comment about Coach Orgeron and his daughter. And all Coach O said was, There's a special place for you to that caller. So everybody's fuses are getting a little short down there.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, moving on to some football. This is a big weekend for all the marbles that Coach Dooley used to say on the Vince Dooley show back in the '80s when I was a kid, and everything's on the table. This is a Southeastern Conference showdown. Georgia's, number two ranked in the country coming in here, wearing those silver britches, going to come in here in Jordan hair and take on those Tigers. I mean, Auburn coming off emotional win last week at LSU. I mean, everybody should come out popping and tackling and biting and scratching, to get this win and everything. It's going to be a good day for entertainment and football, and we're going to see at the end how this thing shake out and who walks away the victor and who goes to the locker room in the agony of defeat. But I'm going to go ahead and pick Georgia. I would say Georgia 24. I'm going to go with Auburn 17.
Well, Georgia should be favored. I mean, there's no question. I mean, you look at their roster, you look at their resume to this point, and they should be favored. Auburn's going to have to overcome quite a bit. But I do think, even with your pick there, I think that Auburn can play it closer than the double digits that a lot of people, that the oddsmakers have it as. So I think we're in for one of those – tense afternoons tomorrow at Jordan-Hare.
Speaking of recruiting and everything, I guess with this weekend being as big as it is, it kicked off Thursday night with the basketball exhibition or playtime down at Tumas Corner, which everybody enjoyed. And, it was pretty nice to do something like that in this area from time to time. As far as recruiting, I guess all the big names and big shoes, 4 stars, 5 stars, or whoever you may be looking at to impress would certainly be on campus this weekend.
Yeah, there's a big list. A couple of dozen of the of top players, football and basketball, are coming in. Sure, I mean, this is the first really big game. I mean, look at what Auburn's played here at home up to this point. It's not even close. So, yeah, this is when you want them in.
And statues will be unveiled this weekend.
They were unveiled this afternoon. This afternoon.
I actually got to see some of that when I was on campus because the event I was attending was not too far away.
Is that right?
So, yeah, so I got to see Bo talking a little bit there as the Pat Dice statue was unveiled. Gene Stallings, I know, was there. I know the sons of Shug Jordan. Wow. And
Cliff Hare's grandson,
yes.
Pat Dye Jr. was there. Yes, Ralph Jordan Jr. was there. Terry Henley was there talking about Shug.
The statues have been unveiled, so if you're over by if you're over by that entrance at any point, you can see, and they are really cool looking.
Wow, I'll probably go by that Sunday then on my day off and walk around and take a look at it and enjoy the sights. Well, guys, I appreciate it, and I'll be hollering at y'all first thing Monday.
All right, good hearing from you, Anthony. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, yeah, the detail, and now correct me if I'm wrong. When we talked to Pat Dye, one of the last times we ever talked to him, and it was the news that he was getting the statue.
That it had just been announced.
And wasn't he really passionate that Shug deserved one too? Wasn't there somebody that he said? I remember he spent a lot of the time talking about there was somebody else who deserved, and for some reason I want to say it was Shug Jordan. who was the other guy that belonged on that list of people who should be honored with an armor statue. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
No, he was talking about
was it someone else? Was it not Shug?
No.
Do you remember who it was?
No, he was talking about Shug.
Okay.
But
because he was saying that was somebody who needed a statue as like his response to the news that he was getting a statue was that he thought Shug really needed one too.
We need to get to our final break. We'll be back to wrap things up here on the Friday Drive.
There's a lot of confusion about how to protect yourself from COVID, with guidelines and regulations changing by the week. One thing is certain. You need an
888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final few minutes. And as we went to break, I'm thinking it was Dr. George Petrie wrote the Auburn Creed that Coach Dye had said also deserved a statue.
And that's not to say.
Not against anything against, you know, Cliff Hare or Shug.
Right, and the statues, again, I mean, the reason we're on this conversation is because among the statues unveiled today by the stadium, Pat Dye, Cliff Hare, and Shug Jordan.
Right.
And they're all really, really cool. If you weren't able to make it today for the unveiling.
I can't wait to see them.
Yeah, if you're over by the stadium, be sure and take a look at them this weekend, because it is, they're really special and a great addition to that entrance.
Oh, man, the Braves had been locked in a scoreless duel until the bottom of the seventh. Did Luke Jackson come in to start the inning, or is he just come in after the bomb?
Jackson came in for Morton following the bomb.
Okay,
but I could check
Rowdy Tellez with a homer, and the Brewers leading the Braves as they still bat in the bottom of the seventh, 2-0.
And now the Braves' offense under the gun a little bit to make something happen as the scoreless tie has been broken by the 2-run Brewers homer.
Yeah, and earlier today, the Astros did go ahead and finish off the White Sox 9-4. They're up 2-0 in the ALDS.
I think, and I probably should verify this before, maybe there's a way Drew can verify, that we're going to go to coverage of that after the show is over. I think we're going to Major
League. I believe that's coming up.
I know we got some Major League Baseball coming on. Do you know what game we're going to throw it to, Drew? So just coverage of the Major League Baseball playoffs here on ESPN 106.7. Could be the Braves game.
Hey, and don't forget, tomorrow, what, around 6 o'clock?
That's right. After the game, I mean, it's a big one. It's a big one, folks.
No kidding.
After the game, live at Sky Bar Cafe in downtown Auburn. We'll be live as soon as Auburn, Georgia is over. Do not miss it.
Our thanks to Jake Rowe of Dogs 247 joining us. Yeah, it is a big one tomorrow. We're back with you Monday. Brian Matthews joins us here in the Wow Business Studio as we look back at the weekend. Yep. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.